Who is Cole Kublik?
No idea.
This could be troubled.
Now with the call, Cole Kublik.
Auburn.
We just talked to Kublik a little while ago.
You watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Cube Ellett, number 61.
I get.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor.
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
Or Stu, or Kevin, or whoever you are. Arky Shea here, The Cube Show. Having a good time here. Want to remind you that right now it is time. It is time. It is Dreamland Barbecue Hogs of the Week time. Yep, every Thursday you get your chance from 6 to 10 to tell us who you think will have the most rushing yards out of the Southeastern Conference this weekend. 14 teams to choose from. 14 is the magic number. You pick one that you think will have the most rushing yards this weekend, you can have any one of those teams you want. Then you text those picks into our show text line. That's 910-663-5663. Add your email address to that, because if you win, we're giving away two winners. If you win, you'll be notified by Dreamland BBQ on how they can get you your prize. And what do you win? Well, I'm glad you asked. You win a $25 gift card to Dreamland Barbecue. Ain't nothing like 'em nowhere. Two $25 gift cards. Plus, just for entering, just for sending your hog of the weekend to 910-663-5663, you'll be entered to win a Dreamland Barbecue Iron Bowl tailgate barbecue package worth $250. Holy smokes. And that's coming up before you know it. So pick an SEC team that you think will have the most rushing yards. You don't have to tell me how many, who the leading rusher is. No, no, no. Just tell me which team do you think will have the most rushing yards. And then text that one more time to 910-663-5663. And go ahead and add the email address. And then you're done. That's right. You're done. That's all you got to do. Just sit back and then collect your winnings. It's that simple. I will tell you this. So far, we've had a lot of picks come in. Every single person but one has picked Alabama. So if you wanted to try to go outside the box and think someone else could do it just to give yourself a better chance to win, that could be an interesting play for you. But everybody but one who picked Mississippi State, everybody else has picked Alabama to really annihilate Tennessee, according to those listening. And I'm not so disagreeing with what's happening on the old picks window. But, again, you want to go outside the box, give yourself a better chance to win, or you could, according to this, have no chance to win if you don't pick Alabama. So there are where your options lie, just to give you a heads up in this final hour. In this final hour, I want to revisit with Chris Felica, who was really, really good. Chris Felica, of course, of College Game Day. A couple of big up-time matchups coming up, not just in the SEC, but outside as well. Chris Felica joined Cole Kublik and others earlier today.
Chris Felica of College Game Day, the Bear, joining us now. Talk some college football games coming up this weekend. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. We were just speaking of this this Penn State-Michigan game. You guys are going to be in Happy Valley for this game. Elite defense for Michigan. Obviously, strong running game behind Saquon Barkley for Penn State. Can Michigan find enough offense, in your opinion, to win this football game?
This game reminds me a lot of what we had last year, late in the year, when Michigan struggled, went on the road and lost to Iowa. Then they had an ugly performance at home against Indiana, in which John O'Korn played and threw for like 65 yards. this was going into the Ohio State game. Well, they, we didn't, Whitland State, we didn't know if he was going to play. This offense is a mess. They can't complete a pass. How are they going to get a first down against Ohio State? And what happened? They broke some tendencies in that game. They found some offense. They nearly went into Ohio State and won. You could argue that they were the better team on the field in that day. This situation reminds me a whole lot of that. Jim Harbaugh's not stupid. He knows after what happened in the last couple of weeks, they're going to have to try and do a couple of different things in the passing game, try and get some things going. Higdon did get out last week for a couple of big runs, and I think that will help. Again, this is a whole new experience now for Penn State and James Franklin. Ranked matchup, nearly a double-digit favorite, expected to win. The Michigan defense is going to, I think, give them a lot of trouble, especially running the ball. And we'll find it increasing sorely when those wide receivers are up to the task as they can win some one-on-one battles. But I think this is going to be a much closer game than a lot of people think.
I mean, it's so weird to see, for us, all the discussion of Saquon Barkley. We know what he is. We know what he means. We know what he does. And the numbers don't lie as to how successful he's been. And he helps his team in different ways. But when you see Penn State only averaging 165 yards per game on the ground as a team, it does kind of make me wonder what else is there to this Penn State offense.
I think you just hit on it right there, 165 yards a game rushing. Barkley is almost as valuable using little swing passes as running plays out of the backfield, and that's how they really account for more of what you would think is a traditional running type game. But hey, a lot of their passing games, passing yards has been just kind of McSorley throw it up and let the wide receiver try and make a play. Gesicki has been hobbled the last couple of games, and he's been slowed down. The tight end, who's a really, really good player, if they can get him back involved in the offense, that will help. But the way with Bush and the way the Michigan linebackers are really athletic now, and they can cover that front for Michigan as well. He's not going to have a whole lot of time to try and find many out.
Chris Felica, the Bear from College Game Day, they'll be on site in Happy Valley Saturday morning. Catch him there. Joining us now on the phones, and you can find him on Twitter at Chris Felica. We also spoke about this game before you joined us, and I don't think that it's really getting the publicity that it deserves as far as what it could mean down the road, and that is number 11 USC playing number 13 Notre Dame. USC, obviously a team, playoff expectations coming in. They've had issues with turnovers. Notre Dame, the more physical team, in my opinion, but when you look at sort of how this game could play out, what do you see?
This is obviously a game, because you look down a couple of weeks from now when the college football playoff rankings are announced. That's like tentacles throughout all of college football. If Notre Dame were to win, you could argue the Pac-12 is really going to be in trouble. Is Washington really going to win out and be a one-loss conference champion there? Notre Dame, you look at what they have coming up with this game. They still have Miami. They still have NC State. They still have Stanford. I mean, this is just like test 105 over the next 6 weeks in the season for the Irish, because you can make an argument right now that Notre Dame is the most underranked team in the country and that they should be ranked. I mean, look, you dominated everyone in your wins. Your loss has been a one-point loss at Georgia, who I would have ranked second in the country right now behind Alabama. They are a dangerous team now. It's a week off. Wimbush is healthy. They've run the ball on everybody except for Georgia. With the way USC is beat up on both sides of the ball, it makes me wonder how you could really make a logical case for USC in this game. But I just get a sense that somehow USC is going to have one last stand, one last effort on the road, play great as an underdog last year at Washington. I think they'll go on the road and they'll play great as an underdog again. The one thing which Sam Darnold could have going for him is that Notre Dame doesn't get a lot of pressure on the quarterback, except when they blitz. If he's able to pick that blitz up quickly, then they have some guys that might be able to make some plays downfield.
Visiting with Chris Felica, the Bear, College Game Day. You can see him Saturday from Happy Valley. We know you have Bears Bank on Saturday mornings, and you talk about some of your picks and games that you like. I have to just get your opinion on what has been happening the last few weeks with these point spreads involved in Alabama football games. Not only will this be the biggest spread in this series, Tennessee and Alabama, but if I understand it correctly, This is the biggest underdog Tennessee has ever been in a football game in the history of the program. Just how is this happening where these gigantic point spreads are finding their way into Alabama's games each and every week?
It's just a recognition of how much better they are than the lower part of the conference and that middle third of the conference. I mean, you're getting games at home against arguably two of the worst teams in the conference, and it really is amazing to think to see that. I mean, this is like, oh gosh, I would say like you put one of those great Nebraska teams of the early and mid '90s up against Iowa State and Missouri when they were down. I mean, that's what you're looking at. I mean, you're getting numbers like this. I mean, for perspective, when Howard, the 1AA team, went to UNLV and won, I mean, they were a 45-point dog. So it's not that far off from the perception between, like, what UNLV would be compared to a 1AA team. So it really is amazing. I mean, Arkansas got that late touchdown last week to cover. And when on the podcast with Steve yesterday, we were talking about, I almost picked Tennessee just because it's a ridiculous number to expect Alabama to win by this many points every game. And as you follow Nick Saban and you follow what he's done at Alabama, he doesn't really have a tendency to kind of run it up and embarrass the opponent. I think it's the last 20 times they've been a favorite of 30 points or more, and that would obviously include a group of five games and non-conference games. I think they're just 5-15 against the number. So there is some historical precedent to think that this game could be like 38-7 or something along those lines, where you're not going to get the 6-3 or 66-0, whatever it was, against Ole Miss a few weeks back.
Chris Pelico of College Game Day with us. How did last week, seven ranked teams going down to unranked opponents, change your opinion of the college football playoff race in 2017?
I don't know if it did much, in my opinion. I think what it did, because I've been thinking for the last couple of weeks now, we are setting this up for a debate at the end of the year to potentially have two teams from whether it's the SEC or the Big Ten, if things, the schedule goes right there, or a two-loss conference champion. I think it's a near certainty that a two-loss team is going to win the Pac-12, and I think there's a real good chance that a two-loss team is going to win the Big 12. But I don't think TCU is going to make it through unscathed. So now you're going to be sitting there with a two-loss conference champ from one of those two conferences, and now you could make the case right now, and I think a lot of people would, but Alabama and Georgia are the two best teams in the country, and Georgia could only get stronger if they handle the cocktail party like they're supposed to. If they go to Jordan Hare and beat Auburn, that's a really, really good win. And they're sitting there 12-0 in the SEC championship game, and they and Alabama play a great game, and they're both undefeated. How are you going to keep one of those two teams out?
Crazy to think about that. What's your opinion on two teams from one conference? I've kind of always been under the impression that I just don't think the committee would ever let it take place. How possible do you think it is?
That you just hit the nail right on the head. That's the issue. The object of the playoff, at least as it was explained to me, is to put the best four teams in the country in the playoffs. Now, it doesn't say anything about two from a conference champ. If you're among the four, they're taking a premise and a stance that by not wanting to put two teams from a conference in, that all conferences are created equal, strength at the top of the conference are all the same, and we all know that's not the case. If it plays out where Georgia's got wins at Auburn, at Notre Dame, dominate Florida, and just look like a great team, and you lose by a touchdown or even maybe 10 points to Alabama, they're sitting there 12-1. Why would their 12-1 suddenly be worse than, say, the 12-1 Ohio State or 12-1 Penn State or 12-1 Texas, something like that? I think you need just to compare all the teams and just put them all in a bucket and whoever the four best are. Could you imagine, though, we were joking about this yesterday, probably the least popular playoff ever would be if you take two teams from the SEC, Notre Dame and Ohio State. That would be like national uproar for everybody outside the SEC and Ohio State country.
But the ratings would still destroy. So, Chris Felica,
college. I think ESPN would be happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, great stuff, man. Thanks for the time. Look forward to catching up soon.
Anytime, Cole. Be good.
Chris Felica, the Bear from College Game Day. They'll be in Happy Valley live this Saturday morning.
Blue bloods. Everywhere there are blue bloods. No one really likes the underdog unless they still kind of look like a blue blood. You know, people like Miami, Penn State's neat, even though they're still blue bloods. It's mainly because we haven't seen them be blue bloods in a while. I don't like that. Then again, would I really want a Georgia State to show up and be competing for the college football playoff? Yeah, probably not. Wouldn't draw all the eyeballs, but I don't really care. Competition's competition, man. I've said it 1,000 times. 4 teams is not enough for this playoff. 4 teams is not enough. Hey, for the record, your Dreamland Barbecue Hogs of the Week contest going on. Since I've mentioned, we got a couple of Auburn picks trickle in. So some people trying to play the other side. See, if Alabama just happens to be 1 yard shy of somebody else, it's going to be Auburn. So interesting to note there. You can get those picks in at 910-663-5663. Quick timeout, Cube Show on the other side.
It's Vegas Runner.
If you treat it like a business, it'll pay like a business.
Only on the Cube Show.
Cash rules everything around me. Cream gets the money. Dollar, dollar bill.
Back live in the studio, Arky Shea here. Vegas Runner over there. Vegas Runner, how are you, man?
Never better. Thanks for having me. Can you believe it? I mean, what's it, week 8 pretty much of college football,
yeah.
week 7? I mean, pretty much some teams have played 7 games, some played 6. But, I mean, the season's just moving on so quickly. And what you're starting to see, I just wanted to not forget to pass this along, is you keep hearing the last 2 weeks about all the big upsets and how, you know, these top-ranked teams are dropping, losing the games outright. And what you got to remember is that the rankings and Vegas are two totally different entities altogether. If you look at the AP top 25, without me even looking, I will guarantee you that the top 5 teams are undefeated. They're either 5-0, 7-0, 6-0. No team with one loss is in the top 5. But if you look at the real odds makers or respected wise guy or betting syndicates power ratings, you look at their top 5, it's completely different. I mean, even teams like Florida State are in most top 10 power ratings. You know, I mean, Ohio State is probably ranked 2nd, and I'd say 9 out of 10 power ratings. They are probably the only team in college football that would be an underdog right now to Alabama. Otherwise, Ohio State would be a touchdown favorite over anyone else, over Oklahoma, over Clemson, over Georgia. On a neutral field, the true line, Ohio State would be a touchdown favorite over any of those teams, if not double digits against teams like Penn State, believe it or not.
That is weird. That is really weird to think
where
about.
A second-ranked Penn State and on a neutral field, Vegas would actually make them and Florida State a pick'em. Or Ohio State and Penn State, Ohio State would actually – they probably bring it out less, but if they did, wise guys would pile on Ohio State like it was free money because their power ratings would reflect Ohio State's probably at least an 8 to 10-point favorite over Penn State, which the odds makers and the bookmakers wouldn't bring it out that high because obviously the public would all be on one side, the Penn State side, which would leave them too exposed. But that's just the difference between what you got to remember when you keep hearing upsets and all these top-ranked teams. You got to remember, are they really ranked in the AP or does Vegas respect these teams? Because you got to remember, Vegas, when they put up their rankings, they back them. Their opinion's backed by cash. I mean, where with the AP, you throw out an opinion, it doesn't matter. If a team loses tomorrow, you take them off the top 5, you throw them in the top 25. It doesn't matter. But with the odds makers, a team loses, they have to think quickly, do we adjust, or was that just a random occurrence? Was that just 60 minutes of football that we don't need to adjust anything? Because I always say, short sample sizes, you're going to see a lot of randomness, and that's the one thing the odds makers are great at doing, quantifying what's random and what actually matters. And a perfect example of that, not to keep going off, is you see the Aaron Rodgers injury. That's the big talk here in Vegas. How many points is he worth to the betting line? And that's been the argument all week between, sharp bettors and the public and the odds makers and the bookmakers, and we're going to find out over the next few weeks, but that's where it becomes interesting. That's the part of it that I love, is who's right. How do you quantify something like that? And that's where it becomes really fun. And again, that's why I always say caution when you hear all about the upsets, because it's not really taking place the way they're making it sound.
Right. That makes sense. That's interesting to think about. By the way, you said that basically the season's all half over. I like to think of it half full as saying we still have half the season to go.
Well said.
That's what
well
I like
said.
To think of, because if not, I'll be depressed because we wait so long for this sport to get here and they think it's already almost over. Vegas, I'm interested in one very particular aspect of the NFL. First, this is going to be a two-part question. First part's real easy. What are the future odds for Green Bay to win the Super Bowl right now?
They doubled up. I'm almost positive. I don't want to just pull it out, you know, because they were a favorite.
Right.
And I know that what happened was books took them off the board. Like, that was the
right.
key. Vegas, back in the day, there was a race over who would have the guts to put out the first number. Now, that's no longer the case. It's everyone wants to wait. So it's like they take the game down and they wait to see who's going to put up the first number. Is it going to be someone in Vegas? Is it going to be someone offshore? And then they start to follow it and copy it. And that's what we saw with the Green Bay Packers, where no one wanted to put out a line, and then offshore they put them up at near 20-1, anywhere between 15-1 and 20-1, depending on the shop you're
okay.
looking at.
Okay.
And that's a big adjustment when you look at the fact they were a prohibitive favorite
right.
prior to
and
last
that's what
week.
I wanted to ask about is that they dropped so far, obviously because of the one injury. So is Aaron Rodgers then the most valuable single player, and obviously this had to be a quarterback, in the NFL to the future odds of winning the Super Bowl? Would Tom Brady be close to that for New England? Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is there anybody else close?
Great question. I don't think so. This season, and I'd have to look at all the backup quarterbacks, because what you have to remember is that's what is going to matter most. What's the drop-off between the starter and the backup? You know, that's key.
Yeah.
How many points different between those two? And in the case of Green Bay, not too much respect, you know, for Green Bay's backup. And what I mean by that is prior to Rodgers getting injured on Sunday, if you wanted to bet New Orleans versus Green Bay Packers, you could have walked into the sportsbook last Sunday and bet it. And Green Bay was a 6.5-point favorite. So prior to Rodgers getting hurt, Green Bay was a 6.5-point favorite. Now they're a 6.5-point underdog. So according to the odds makers, or more importantly to the betting market, because the odds makers put out a number, we, the betting market, decide where that number goes. So the betting market decided that Rodgers is worth, you know, close to two touchdowns. Now, that seems like a lot, because we're supposedly under the impression that no player is worth more than a touchdown, you know, and maybe only a dozen non-quarterbacks are worth even a point to the betting line. So quarterbacks are worth the most, and Rodgers probably one of the highest. But how many points is he worth? And real quickly with Rodgers is we don't have with this backup, but we have a little history. Back in the 2013-14 season when he got injured and Tolzien came in, what happened was Vegas got rocked because they did the normal adjustment. He's worth around 6-7 points. What they realized was that wasn't enough. Rodgers was worth a lot more to that team. And for four straight weeks, they got beat up because even though they were adjusting, they weren't adjusting enough. And the market beat them up for it. And that's the thing with Vegas is they don't, you know, want to have a knee-jerk reaction, but they do get it wrong sometimes. And they did so back then. And it's going to be interesting how this Rodgers injury plays out and if their adjustment, if they just went way too far by making him look as if he's almost a two touchdowns worth that much to the betting line.
Yeah, wow, that's just, wow, for that one game, man.
Minus 6.5 to, you know, from being a 6.5-point favorite to being a 6.5-point dog, that's just huge.
That's
when you talk about the NFL.
It feels insane. Last question. Alabama is a ginormous favorite against Tennessee this weekend. I think I've read where Tennessee is, this is the biggest underdog they've ever been, especially when you consider it's a conference matchup, it's a rivalry. Where's the money coming in right now for Alabama as far as a game like this? Are they still backing Alabama to try to get that number even higher?
Yeah, sharp bettors right away backed Alabama, and I think that it was because it came out at 34, and they figured it's going to get through 35, which, you know, five touchdowns, and so they got the better of the number. I wouldn't go as far as saying I think this is like a big official, you know, real move by the betting syndicates. I think it was just them trying to get out ahead of the market, because they do expect the money from the public even to come in on the Alabama side. This is a big adjustment from what earlier in the season. Prior to the season, this line was about 22. Alabama was a 22-point favorite. So they've adjusted almost two touchdowns since week one. Is it enough? Odds looks like the wise guys, or at least the market, doesn't think so. It opened 34. Like I said, it's up to 36. And the total went from 50.5 to 51. So a 36-point favorite and the total's only 51 kind of tells you they don't expect many points out of Tennessee. They don't expect them to get the double digits based on this point spread.
Yeah,
and total.
Well, that's probably what's going to happen. So, Vegas, appreciate the time, man. Can't wait to talk to you next week. Thank you,
sir. Pleasure's mine. Thanks for having me. Enjoy the game.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Maybe this is me. And I'm trying. I really am. I promise you that I am. I'm trying to give them a shot. This has nothing to do with Vegas. Vegas, great stuff as it is. I've been reading some of the stuff on Barstool, and I actually went and switched the old Watch ESPN app and started watching their Van Talk show that recently got put on ESPN2 at 1 a.m. Eastern time. I think it's midnight local. I don't get it. You know? And maybe not everything's for me to get. I just don't get the appeal of dudes being bros and looking like and acting like that they are total frat boys who are trying to be cool with tight old shirts because that's the style now, and the random britches that get worn all over the place. I don't see how this appeals to anybody, actually. And I'll be honest with you. At one point, I did subscribe to their podcast. I subscribed because I wanted to try it, and it is hard to get through. It is hard to get through. It is laborious, and it's a lot. It's a lot to try to overcome. Podcasts, shows, things I like to listen to, not try to survive. Anyway, if you are a Barstool fan, please tweet into the show and tell me why. Because we're going to take a quick timeout. Cube Show. Running out of time. Just 17 minutes. To get in your Dreamland Barbecue Hogs of the Week, pick the SEC team in which you think will have the most rushing yards this weekend. You can pick any one of the 14 teams, may or may not all be playing, and you could text that in to 910-663-5663. Give that with your email address. If you win, $25 gift card to Dreamland Barbecue. Ain't nothing like him nowhere. And follow him on Twitter as well, at DreamlandBBQ. And don't forget, you'll need that number tomorrow as well as the Hover Helmet Fantasy Challenge returns for a Friday edition, as per always. So maybe you want to start looking into which college quarterback, running back, and wide receiver may go hard this weekend, which means you could win yourself a Hover Helmet. So be thinking about that as well. And also tomorrow, we'll have Michael Widener in of Hover Helmets to talk about them bad boys and how great of a gift they are. And maybe has an extra bonus one to give away for this weekend. We'll see what we can talk Michael into once he gets in studio early tomorrow. I think 6:30 in the morning he's going to be coming in and hanging out with us. So I started seeing that these midseason awards are being handed out. It's not new to this year, but it's kind of annoying. Does anybody care legitimately care, even half-heartedly care, if a player on your favorite team is on a mid-season award list? Is there pride in that? Is there a level of dignification there? Is there a level of legitimacy if ESPN or Sports Illustrated or Maxim magazine, I mean, I miss all those, like the Playboy All-American teams. Is there an air of legitimacy for you, for your team, if after halfway through the football season they make it onto a list? I know there were some people that were mad that I think the Johnny Unitas Award list, I believe that's right, maybe it's the Max, but I think it's the Johnny Unitas list, came out, I think, earlier this week, and Nick Fitzgerald was on it, but Jalen Hurts was not. Even though if you look at just a pure statistical analysis of it, in the very basics of it, meaning completion percentage, passing yards, rushing yards, touchdowns versus interceptions, Jalen Hurts was better? Does it matter to you if somebody's on a list mid-season? And that's what bugs me the most, I think. It's because our fandom kind of gets in the way, and I'm guilty to a degree too, of really seeing what we need to be seeing. Like we're so beholden to our team's logo that we kind of forget the dumbness that we're actually approving by retweeting, liking, sharing on Facebook. What is it to say that a pro football focus or a college football focus or a Athlon magazine gives your team a preseason, midseason nod? Because really, when you think about it, isn't this all just about the games? It's about the games and at the end of the year. It doesn't mean we can't talk about it and be fluffed during the middle of the season, but why we got to create all of this extra? We don't need this extra. We talk about it 365 on this station because we want to talk about it and because there are things we can try and project and speculate on, and the games themselves, what's actually happened and what we think could happen that weekend. Or if it's in February, what we think will happen in 8 months. I don't need articles and little flub-ups being written about a guy saying that he's good. Hey, Minkah Fitzpatrick, check out his coverage rating when his defensive linemen and linebackers are rushing more than six. Check out that. It doesn't mean anything to anybody. Anywhere. It shouldn't. It's just garbage. It's just, as Nick Saban would say, rat poison. It's noise. All it is noise. And every time I see something like that retweeted onto my timeline, I almost want to unfollow or block you if I'm following you. Because we have to see the forest for the trees. Twitter, it's about the opinions and thoughts and exchange of, as opposed to just trying to be a machine, a cog in the machine of just getting out your, and by the way, these aren't being touted as opinions, these are being touted as facts, of your publications. I just want Twitter the way it was a few years ago. And I just want social media to be that. And I want you all to understand, because one of the biggest things we try to do on the show is to make you smarter fans. I want to make us smarter fans. I want to be a smarter fan. The only time I retweet that is to make fun of it. And I don't know what you get from this, because I get nothing from it. What do you get by retweeting an elusive rating of a running back that's on your favorite team? What do you get by clicking on a story that says, check out my midseason All-Americans? Did Minkah make it? Was Jalen snubbed? Is Damian Harris getting the respect he deserves? That's what you and I need to be talking about. You tweet to me, I tweet to you, we tweet out in the ether. That's what we need to be talking about. We can screen grab all the stats and stuff too we want, because that's legitimate. But we're comparing things. We want to be able to show one versus the other, right? Perfectly fine. To throw out these mid-season awards just to conjure up content so we can get your clicks, save your clicks. Go to umpsports.com. Vote on High School Player of the Week. Click Listen Live. Find the podcast. Save those clicks for stuff that's more interesting, better suited. It's all about sharing the content. It's all about, I got to come up with something that gets you guys all interested in. And mid-season awards, it's kind of something that people started doing 10, 15, 20, I don't know how many years ago, and they just kept doing it because we're not doing anything new. I don't like it. You shouldn't like it. You should look at a mid-season award list and think, what the hell is this? A mid-season award? Do they stop the season now? Is there a ceremony that goes in Orlando for the mid-season Walter Camp Award winner? Is the Nagurski mid-season award given out now? Because I tell you this, another list came out of the Bear Bryant Coach of the Year Awards, and you technically don't have to be on it to win it. Because at the midway point, you know what can still happen? A lot of football. People were mad that Bill Clark wasn't on the 20 or 25 person list. If Bill Clark goes 10-2, he'll be in the finalist. It won't take what he's doing. He's 4-2 right now. And I understand what UAB has done. It's marvelous to be 4-2 without playing football for 2 years. There's two winless teams in your conference and you're not one of them. It's pretty darn great. It's exciting. Just trying to get you guys mad. You know what started this was the AP poll. Jackasses invent things just to get people mad. The founder of the AP poll admitted the reason he made the poll was to get people angry and to react. Don't react when people just tell you to react. Preseason polls. Time to react! Don't react. Proact. Yes. Not confirm that that's a word, but be proactive. Just talk about the team and how it is. You have to react to somebody's article. Man, some of the worst radio out there is when people just read articles and just comment on it. That's not what this is. It's an engaging experience in which we will continue tomorrow. In which on the ump tomorrow you can win a hover helmet. And we won't react. We'll proact. React things, direct things that happen. Not to things that people type up on blogospheres. Come on.